is going to start us off
Love
with
Talk Radio.
Drumming and beautiful Christian music. I have permission to play this song. Don't own the rights, you know, but I have permission. Hallelujah.
And has let us run some people for that. From every tribe and language, people, every nation. Where warriors are falling, there's a resurrection coming.
It is your time to rise and shine.
Oh, wake up, you sleeping giant.
The wounds of injustice are being healed by the peace.
Hey. Oh, yeah, oh.
We're bringing us power through unity.
Hey.
Where warriors are falling, there's a resurrection coming.
Tonight. Hallelujah. Welcome. Thank you for joining me this evening in the Facebook Live family, Soul Purpose Healing. As I said, my sister Zelda informed me that somebody in Australia has another Soul Purpose Healing Facebook, and it's starting to get a little confusing, but that's okay. I welcome my Australian sister and bringing in Soul Purpose Healing. But just don't get confused. We're here tonight on Viata's Soul Purpose Healing. So if you're looking for the right one, go to Viata. So, or it's on my page. I've actually shared this show. It's on my Viata page. So you can go to either page if you don't want to call into the studio. But we're talking about a very important subject tonight, the triune brain, especially the reptilian brain. Whoa, that's a lot of the confusion you're seeing in people today is because of that lower level brain, reptilian. We're going to learn a lot about that tonight. And we're also going to learn about the Black Wall Street Massacre. Tomorrow will mark 100 years. 100 years ago, 1921, there was a huge massacre in Greenwood community near Tulsa, Oklahoma, like a suburb of Tulsa, where hundreds of people died from a massacre by European Americans against the Black Americans. Very sad time. I actually have a distant cousin whose mother and whose grandmother and aunt were there at that time, and they have since passed on. But I was talking to her today because she remembers they interviewed her aunt who has passed away, and she remembers that. In fact, please say a prayer for my cousin, Deborah Swoop is her name. She had a stroke, and she's struggling to get back her life again. So Debbie Swoop is her name. And her grandmother was in Tulsa back in 1921 when this occurred, this horrible massacre occurred. Now, we had, even this week, we had a 107-year-old, and I don't have her name, 107-year-old last survivor of the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre was in Washington, D.C., begging for reparations or begging for some type of something to calm the energy around that massacre. We're still looking for some relief in some parts for that horrible, horrible incident. So we're going to talk about that. It's time for healing. But I was amazed at how clear this 107-year-old woman was talking. I listened to her interview. In fact, I was going to play it, but I'll just give you. She was just sharing how horrible that was and how she would love to see our government do something about it. What do you do about it 100 years ago? I'm going to tell you some of my own personal beliefs about that. One of them is back there in this picture. Because 1921, 3 years after that, my father was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, okay? And the significance of his entrance into the universe, and I hope Eddie Harris shows up. He can give us the numbers on this. But 3 years after that horrible massacre, Sherman John Howard was born to his mother, Loretta Howard. And then 27 years later, Sherman John Howard was a superstar in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was part of the first integrated team, University of Nevada football team, to play the University of Oklahoma football team. I think it was either University of Tulsa or University of Oklahoma. It was a big deal, and you can read more about it in his book that he and I wrote together, about that incident that happened back in 1948, October 23rd, 1948, 27 years after that horrible massacre. My dad and one other Black man flew into Tulsa with his all-white teammates, and they played the University of Oklahoma for the first time, an integrated team. It was a lot of grumbling and complaining about whether he should even play because it was Jim Crow South, Jim Crow laws. And they played anyway because his teammate said, we're not playing without him, so going to get this show on the road. Let's do it. And they did. So my dad made history, really, and played with his University of Nevada football team in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1948, integrating the college football field for the first time. And they beat my dad's team, University of Nevada, beat the Oklahoma team. What was it? 65-14. Ah, slaughter. It was a slaughter. That was the beginning of many victories with black players on mostly white teams. And so my dad was a pioneer, one of the many pioneers that changed history. No more segregation, no more wars, no more violence on the football field, at least somewhat. And that was the beginning of all white football teams recognizing that they weren't going to win very many games without black players on them. So they started integrating the football teams more and more after 1948. So just thinking about that part of the history of Oklahoma, that took place very close to where the Black Wall Street Massacre took place. So the universe has a way of making up for the past histories of massacres and mental illness. Because one of the things that was going on in Tulsa at that time in 1921 was just mental illness. But let me just play a clip that shares a little bit more on the legacy of Wall Street, because it was actually called, I think, Colored Wall Street, but by someone else. But let's just hear, before we move forward, and I've invited L.A. Davis to join me, because he's done a lot of shows about Black Wall Street, and he brings a very different perspective, I think, than most people would. But I have like a 6-minute summary of the legacy of that time by men and women of dark skin who started this community and that eventually was totally destroyed by fire and bombs and just mental illness, I'd say. So let's hear a little bit about the history of the whole thing.
Black Wall Street comes from the Negro Wall Street of America, which is a term that was affixed to the community, according to lore, by Booker T. Washington. Black Wall Street is in many ways a misnomer, because what the business community in the Greenwood District, the black community in Tulsa, was like, was more like, would be a black Main Street. So these were not, you know, banking enterprises and investment enterprises. These were mostly small businesses. So there were movie theaters and dance halls and barber shops and grocery stores and restaurants and service providers like doctors and lawyers and pharmacists and dentists. These are relatively well-off black folks who contributed to the economic forces of places like the Greenwood District, Black Wall Street in Tulsa, like the successful black business community in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and like the successful small all-black towns that dotted Oklahoma during this period. The conditions were particularly oppressive in the Deep South, in places like Alabama, Mississippi. So there were people who came to Oklahoma during the land openings beginning in 1889, African-American people who recruited black folks to come from the Deep South to Oklahoma, really with the idea that they could get a fair shake in Oklahoma. A number of notable figures dotted the Greenwood District in its early heyday. O.W. Gurley is considered the father of the Greenwood District. He's a relatively wealthy black man from Arkansas who came to Oklahoma in the land run in 1889, ended up in Tulsa. 1906, he started his first business. He owned the Gurley Hotel and had a grocery store as well. He also bought land and sold it to other black folks in the community at that time. So in some senses, he helped populate the district. So for those reasons, he's considered the founder and the father of the district. Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District, was also a community of necessity. There wouldn't have been a need for a separate black economic island in Tulsa had it not been for Jim Crow segregation. So black people were not able to participate fully in the mainstream economy dominated by white Tulsa. They created their own economy. This community thrived up until the first devastation, which was the massacre. Many black families spent days, weeks, and months living in tent cities set up by the Red Cross. And the destruction was almost complete. Property damage, conservatively estimated, was $1.5 to $2 million. Again, that's conservatively estimated. And that would translate today well over $25 million. It is a complicated event. I would say, by way of context, that it is also emblematic of the racial violence that diffused the United States during this period. And it's impossible to understand what happened in Tulsa in 1921 if you don't appreciate the kind of systemic racism that was operating in the country during that period and thereafter. The community was rebuilt after that to a substantial degree, peaking in the 1940s, early to mid-1940s, with well over 200 documented black-owned and operated businesses. But then there was a second devastation. This was not a devastation affected through violence, but rather through policy. So generally, black wealth is one-tenth of white wealth. That's sort of the general standard. And why is that? It's because the lack of the ability on part of African Americans to transfer wealth intergenerationally, because there are barriers to that. Among the barriers are these incidents, like the one in Tulsa, the massacre. It really obliterated black wealth that would have otherwise transferred across generations. As Americans, we're not really good about addressing hard history. And we're not really good about making sure our textbooks include history that is troubling, particularly around race. In Tulsa in particular, Tulsa was on an upward trajectory in 1921. It went on to become the self-described oil capital of the world. So the leaders were not really interested in promoting or including this history in documents. In fact, they had an interest in minimizing this history. Would Tulsa have been Atlanta had it not been for the massacre? Because Atlanta is considered kind of the black mecca and has been for the last few decades. The answer is, of course, I don't know. And we'll never know. But certainly Tulsa would be more advanced economically in terms of the black community had it not been for that great disruptor that was the massacre. I talk about the Black Wall Street mindset, and that is the indomitable human spirit, can-do attitude in the economic and entrepreneurial realm. And that's what resonates with me when I think about Black Wall Street. It's not necessarily a geographic space. It's not a particular set of enterprises. It's a mindset. And it's a mindset that is malleable and portable.
So there you have it. That's one man's summary of the legacy that was created in Tulsa, Oklahoma back in 1920s, early 1900s actually, because I believe he said Mr. Gurley, who the one who founded that community, developed that community, started that I think in the early 1800s. So that community lasted for a good while, but there's still the what if it hadn't happened? Where would we be? Well, this 107-year-old woman was in Washington, D.C. testifying this week about what she missed out on because of that massacre, not to mention the psychological damage of having to wake up to bombs and violence and having to totally uplift and move away from the community, living in tents, as he said. So there's always the what if this had happened. But my question is always, why did the Creator allow these things to happen? And we're going to hear maybe later from L.A. Davis, who has been studying this part of history for some time, and he brought out some interesting points about it. But if you have any comments you'd like to make on this part of the show, because as he said, it's a mind thing, and we're going to go into the triune mind that is running this Corona adventure right now. We're going to break down the reptilian mind and the other two parts of the brain that seem to be controlling other people's behavior these days. So, but we want to ask the question is, why would a loving creator allow this massacre to take place? Was it ego involved? Was there pride involved? Or was it just pure evil? I mean, there was definitely mental illness on the part of European men, or men and women maybe, who were not in the right mind to let this community flourish of black men and women that could bless the whole area, basically make friendships, community, neighborhoods. Mental illness played a big part in that massacre. And then the government, there is some information out there that our government was involved, dropping bombs and who knows whatever. So this history is so complex, full of mental illness, and especially full of mental government corruption. It just goes back really far, doesn't it? And yet today, we have a lot of people trusting the government. Interesting. So I have, let's see, I think Mama AZ has pressed one. I'm going to let her comment before we go to the break, because this is a part of history we want to heal. We want to heal. Even if there's a 107-year-old woman showing up to Washington, and this woman just appeared to be the healthiest 107-year-old, I just don't know why there's not just gratitude that she made it this far. But she wants something, or she was convinced that she was reading from a script. So she was convinced that she should show up in D.C. and ask for something for the suffering over the last 100 years. Because it's been 100 years since this massacre took place. And I'm here to suggest it's time for us to heal. Dulcie, hi Dulcie, and hi Zelda. So, Mama AZ, your mic is open. Did you have a comment, my sister?
Yeah, Grand Risings. Dr. V, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, and it's evening here in Florida.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's still a Grand Risings because what's today, Dr. V? Let me see.
May 30th.
Okay, so that's a 5. That's 8.
It's a
4.
Yes,
a 4. Yeah. Okay. Is that a 4? Doesn't that add up to a 4?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, this. Thank you, Dr. V. This is dedicated to my family about Black Wall Street. My granddaughter opened her heart, and she came to see me today. Tessa, LaTessa, Marie, Lewis. Thank you so much, baby. This is also dedicated to my dad, who's on the other side, Bob Paris, and the Crawford family, and the Van family, and all of those people, the Paris family that was involved in Black Wall Street, and even my dad's dad. Had a school, the Paris had a school family there in Oklahoma, 300 acres of land. And I researched this in 2006 when I came across Napoleon Davis's teepee. But what I want to say to the family, the Crawford family, the Paris family, the Van family, and all of those families that are connected, you must do research, because when my dad told me about Black Wall Street, I swear, Dr. V, I thought my dad was actually lying. I was told about Black Indian people and the school and all of that, the bombing and everything, and I cringe. Thinking my dad was making all of this up. And why did I have that unconscious mindset? I was born in Maricopa County, one of the most racist states, meaning Arizona. Phoenix, Arizona is Maricopa County. You can look it up. and things that I was taught was all racist, all of it. And when my dad would tell me these things, I swear, I thought he was lying. And it hurt me so bad to find out how ignorant and unconscious I was. And right today is still the ignorant and unconscious thinking of my family, the Crawford, the Paris, the Vans, all of those people from Oklahoma, not knowing that what my dad was sharing with me was a fact, was a fact. Even when he tried to get me to come to Oklahoma to get on the rolls, the Dawes rolls, because my aunt and my dad, both of my aunts and others, were getting monies because of who they were. And stupid me, with my unconscious upbringing there in Phoenix, Arizona, right today, it hurts me. So this show is to be dedicated to my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren's children. When you come across this, babies, research, because I will truly be on the other side. It won't be too long from now. And I need for you to research this. It's very important. And I wonder sometimes, too, Dr. V, why was this allowed to happen? Why was I so unconscious and didn't believe the truth when my dad was telling me this? Why? Why did I have that mindset? What were the lessons that we were all to learn from this? I think about this a lot.
Yeah,
and due to the fact that today is a four, four represents foundation, but also thinking out of the box.
Yeah, four is creative works as well. And so there's a lot of creativity we can do tonight to overstand, not understand what happened in 100 years ago, but overstand what happened and then interstand. So I'm going to play a little thing about positive psychology, because when you said stupid me, that's not a statement that really applies to you, my sister. That is not what your journey has been about at all. It has not been about stupid you at all. It's about exploring me and creative me, and let's see what I can do or decision I can make today to learn a lesson. But here's a little to introduce us to how the mind works, because we got to get into this triune brain that is really running the show a lot in people today. But the decisions that we see people making that we're going, huh, what, why'd they do that? So here's the first audio about positive psychology.
Is the glass half empty or half full? Actually, it depends which part of your brain you're using habitually. The reptilian R complex, which is located in the brainstem, can only ever think of its own survival. It's the animal part of us and therefore always tends to see things half empty. Whereas the more developed areas, such as the anterior cingulate cortex, are much more capable of higher perceptions, such as gratitude or acknowledgement. The R complex is a relic of our ancient past. Its only question is, what's in it for me? How do I survive? It sees things in terms of safety or danger, so it doesn't really do higher thought. It hasn't got the time to do higher thought. Acknowledgement and gratitude, however, belong to higher areas such as the anterior cingulate cortex, to name just one. In a state of gratitude, we can see what's around us in a radically different way. We notice things as they are, rather than just skipping over them, which the R complex will tend to do. They almost seem to multiply in front of us. And it's well known that the state you're in largely dictates the kind of behavior you engage in. So in this state, we're much more able to provide a value to the marketplace. And it turns out that this is a far superior business strategy in today's market. It might seem counterintuitive, But generous activity is a much better business strategy in a free market, and we can see why. Imagine you're on a beach, and an ice cream van pulls up and announces free ice cream for anyone and everyone who turns up. Pretty soon there'll be a massive crowd there for the simple reason that value always attracts an audience. One of the biggest free markets in the world is the internet. With so many free voices shouting loudly, value always shouts the loudest. It always attracts an audience. So the take-home message is this. The more we can rise above the reptilian brain's way of thinking, the more value we will be able to provide in a free market. And this will lead to a far better business strategy. If we thought in terms of just how do I survive, it's difficult to do anything of value. Is fear of survival the most efficient way to function, or is it just further mind games that keep us from a higher potential?
Subscribe to InfoGnostica.
Okay, so that was a basic introduction to the reptilian brain, which we're going to dive into deep, because this brain of reptilian brain has been out of country, is out of control. But Mama AZ brought out an important point. We tend to go through our early years thinking we're stupid, I'm worthless, I made silly mistakes, I did this, blah, blah. But it's really a process of brain development or not, because by the time you're her age where she's in full gratitude and responsibility mode, this is a normal process. And I'm very grateful to know a person like her who's very mature about her her perception of life. And we're going to talk about that more and more, especially the brain. Why are people in survival? Well, we know people are in survival mode big time right now, as he said, because of the internet, because of news versus gratitude. Gratitude happens at a slow pace when we're on this journey called human development. So Naima Latif is in the studio. She's going to play our sponsors for us, and we'll be right back with more conversation about this triune brain and the Black Wall Street healing process. Thank you, Naima.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Everything you need, what your body needs, is found in nature. So Susan Essentials doesn't do it any other way. Susan Essentials provides your employees and individuals access to over 20,000 nutritional products, and they are shipped direct to your door. Because Susan Essentials is certified in plant-based healing, we're permitted to offer you the best nutritional supplements on the planet. They're non-GMO and sustainably produced, and we take the guesswork out for you. Let Susan Essentials help you take control of your health today.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viata.
And we are back this evening. We're talking about the triune brain, which includes the reptilian brain. We're going to learn a lot about this triune brain so we can get into peace mode about the behavior of people around us these days. And we're talking about Black Wall Street Massacre. If you just joined us, feel free to call in and comment. The number is 215-383-5863. We're talking about an event that happened 100 years ago. In fact, Mama AZ will like this. I just give the numbers. May 31st, 1921 was a 4. So today is also a 4. When you add up the dates of any event, you get numbers that are, can be interpreted as significant, and especially in terms of synchronicity and why it happened and why we're doing this show today. 2 4s. It was a 4 in 1921, 100 years ago, when this event occurred, and it's a, which will be tomorrow, the 31st, but it's a 4 today, May 30th, 2021. How about that? How did we do that? I don't know. Yeah, we know. Synchronicity. It's always about synchronicity and the universe of reaping and sowing. So my question is, why are we blaming the United States government for something that happened 100 years ago? Well, maybe because some are reporting that there were bombs dropped on that community. Why on earth would the bombs be dropped on a community that was prospering and doing well? What is that? It's all about the mental illness that was going on back in the early 1890s. All of that time was just full of mental illness. It was like, the brain was not healthy back then. So much confusion and conflict and hatred and bullying and racism and blah, blah, and we still have some of the same thing going on today. So what's up with that? What's up with that? Can anybody explain, though, why we should be blaming the government at this point and not be in gratitude that our ancestors, some of them, survived? 107-year-old woman comes to Congress last week to talk about her experience with that massacre. And she's wanting to blame the government for it instead of what? Gratitude. That was my thought as I listened to her testimony. I thought, wow, that's interesting. And she had a script. Somebody wrote that script for her. But she was very clear at 107 years old. I was impressed. And back then it was survival. Survival after such a massacre. Hundreds of people had to figure out a way to survive. So guess what? That reptilian brain developed quickly after something like that. Now, we have been also, I think over the past year, a lot of people are still in survival mode after a trauma. It seems to me, it's just coming to me, that when you have a trauma like that, your brain immediately gets in the reptilian mode. It's very difficult to go through a trauma like that and get into gratitude, which is what the higher mind does. But should we still be in blame mode in 2021, 100 years later? We're here to heal this. We're here to heal this so we can have unity and move forward, because how, one of the ways that community was built was from unity. That community had to come together with the leadership of Mr. Gurley, was his name, and they had to come together and build such a beautiful community with businesses thriving, small businesses thriving. It was a creative work for sure, like the 4 today that we're looking at. And it was just one of those events that we should be so proud of. And yet the massacre brings us to a place of blame again. Oh, we got to blame somebody. So why is it that the universe allows these type of tragic events? That's my question. What is the lesson in all of this that the universe keeps bringing these massacres and these killings and mental illness just keeps going on and on and on. So we want to understand this by looking at the brain, how this brain works. And so we're going to listen to another explanation of the three main parts of the brain. Let's see which one is here. Oh, this is a professor from Stanford. I love this guy. He's so calm. And he really breaks down the brain, three brain system. We heard about the reptilian brain or about its survival mode. We understand that. And that's what we're observing a lot today is the survival brain. So this triune brain is running a lot, but mainly the reptilian. So Professor Spotsky, I think his name is going to explain a little bit more about this triune, Sapolsky, Robert Sapolsky, love this guy's calm voice, about the three brain system. And my intention here is that we will have peace about what we're observing in 2021, 100 years later, where we haven't really had a major massacre like we had in Tulsa back then. But we've had a trauma of sorts that has thrown a lot of people into reptilian brain instead of all those higher other brain levels. So let's just learn a little bit about this beautiful mass of cells.
What's the best way to think about the brain? It's insanely complicated. Everything connects to everything. A gazillion little subregions. Amid all that complexity, there's a broadly sort of simplifying way to sort of think about aspects of brain function when it comes to behavior. And this was an idea put forth by this guy, Paul MacLean, a grand poobah on the field, conceptually of thinking in the brain, of the brain as coming in three functional layers, the triune brain. And again, this is highly schematic. The brain really doesn't come in three layers. But one can think of the first most, the bottom most, the most ancient as being what's often termed the reptilian brain, where basically the parts in there, we've got the same wiring as in a lizard, as in any ancient creature. It's been there forever, ancient wiring at the base of the brain, most inside. And what does that region do? All the regulatory stuff. Your body temperature changes, it senses it and causes you to sweat or shiver. It's monitoring your blood glucose levels. It's like releasing hormones that are essential to sort of everyday shopkeeping. It's just, you know, keeping regulatory stuff in balance. Sitting on top of that is conceptually what could be termed the limbic system, the emotional part of the brain. And this is very much a mammalian specialty. Lizards are not well known for their emotional lives. Part of the brain having to do with fear, arousal, anxiety, sexual longings, all those sorts of things, very mammalian. You're off there in the grasslands butting heads with somebody else with antlers, and it's your limbic system that's heavily involved in that. Then sitting on the top is the layer three, the cortex. The cortex, spanking new, most recently evolved part of the brain. Everybody's got a little bit of cortex, but it's not till you get to primates that you got tons, and then apes, and then us. So functionally, it's very easy to think of this simplistic flow of commands. Layer two, the limbic system, could make layer one, the reptilian brain, activate. When is that? Your heart speeds faster, not because of a regulatory reptilian thing, ooh, you've been cut, something painful, but oh, an emotional state. You're a wildebeest and there's some scary, menacing wildebeest threatening you in your terror, and that emotional state causes your limbic system to activate the reptilian brain and your heart beats faster. You have a stress response, not because a regulatory change happened in your body, but for an emotional reason. Then it's very easy to think of layered on top, this cortical area commanding your second layer, your limbic system, to have an emotional response. Rather than something emotional, here's a threatening beast right in front of you, something emotional, you see a movie that's emotionally upsetting. See a movie. These are not real characters, they're pixels. And it's your cortex that's turning that abstract cognitive state into an emotional response. Likewise, your cortex, layer three, could influence events down in layer one. you see something upsetting, you think about something, you think about mortality. One of these days, my heart is going to stop beating, and your heart's going to beat faster. You're not bleeding and hypotensive. You're not in some nothing in the reptilian brain can make sense of this. A purely cognitive state, ooh, on the other side of the planet, there are people undergoing some traumatic event, and I feel upset about it, and your reptilian brain responds. So it's very easy, given that, to think of a 3-2-1 sort of scenario. Just as readily, though, 1-2-3. What would be a case of that? What's your reptilian brain talking to your cortex? Remarkable finding, when we're hungry, we make harsher moral judgments about people's transgressions. We're less charitable. We cheat more in economic games. Our cortex assessing the effects of pro-sociality, antisociality, and altruism and its evolution, and part of what it's doing in deciding how it feels about somebody else's plight is, if your stomach's gurgling, if you're hungry, if you're in pain, that affects very cortical judgment type areas. Layer one, this ancient reptilian brain that should have nothing to do with how your cortex works, having tons to do with it. Or layer two, influencing layer three, your limbic system, your emotional state, influences your abstract cognitive processes. What's the most obvious example of it? When we're under stress, when we're in an emotionally aroused state, we make stupid, impulsive decisions that seem brilliant at the time. Affective, emotional, limbic layer two, influencing how your cortical cortex goes about its abstractions. It's not that abstract. It's embedded in the biology of all these layers. This interaction between these layers, it seems this very mechanical process, potentially even an unconscious one. How do we consciously have, say, our cortex regulate an emotion, a limbic two layer? Simple. Think about the most arousing, wonderful thing that ever happened to you umpteen decades ago, and your cortex is evoking a memory that's got your limbic system humming along in some excited state. Or think cortically, or pull out the memories of some traumatic event, and your limbic system is responding. How about reptilian level? Easy to make it get into an agitated state. Sit there and think about something incredibly upsetting. Think about some memory that was truly disturbing. Think about mortality. Think about global warming. And your heart speeds up. Layer three, in a very conscious way, has mobilized layer one. A lot harder is the inverse. You're sitting there and you suffer from high blood pressure, and either they could marinate you in antihypertensive drugs for the rest of your life, or an alternative approach, a biofeedback approach, is sit there and think about the happiest day of your life. Think about being in an open field that's beautiful. Think about your favorite vacation. Think about, and if it's the right thinking about, suddenly your heart slows down. Suddenly your blood pressure goes down. The core of biofeedback is figuring out what sort of conscious states you can evoke that will affect your reptilian brain in a direction that's good for your health. And all you do then is learn how to get better and better in some stressed, hypertensive circumstance. What conscious active thinking can I mobilize here at this point that will cause changes in how my big toe's blood flow is working in a case like that? That is very conscious regulation of more autonomic, more ancient parts of your brain.
So we have this amazing cellular conglomeration up here called the brain. And as you heard, I don't know if you thought that was a little bit confusing, but on some level, it's like, how do they figure out how this brain works? But we have so much information about the brain that we can really make choices about how we want to have this functioning apparatus working. I believe Naima has our brother L.A. On the other line in the studio. So I'm going to open up her mic and see if Mr. L.A. is ready. Mr. L.A. Davis has a show, Solar Landlord, and it's my house on Blog Talk Radio, and he's done many shows on Black Wall Street. So I asked him to come on and share his knowledge about what he, his perspective on this, because he has a very interesting perspective on Black Wall Street. And we're trying to heal that. Instead of blaming the government for everything, we want to heal that tonight and bring gratitude in. Because, I mean, that 107-year-old woman, if that's not gratitude, she could. She was talking clearly. She was reading clearly. She was sitting up. Her eyes were moving. She wasn't blind. She didn't appear to be sick at all. But she's blaming the government for what happened. I think somebody put her up to that. But I don't know. Is L.A. ready to talk at this point?
Yeah, I'm here.
Welcome, L.A. Thank you for joining us because, as I said, you have studied Black Wall Street for some time, and you even were the one telling me about Mr. Gurley. So what's your perspective on what happened 100 years ago and how we can move forward from that?
All right. Well, I've actually been boots on the ground in that neck of the woods because I have some interest in some communities and towns in that neck of the woods in the state of Oklahoma. The best way I can probably illustrate this would be if everybody would visualize a chessboard, and we can call this Black Wall Street Chess. So visualize a chessboard. On each side, you've got 16 pieces. The white side's got 16 pieces. The black side's got 16 pieces. All right. So in fitness into Black Wall Street, at that time in 1921 in Oklahoma, there were 50 black municipalities in the state of Oklahoma.
In 1921? Wow.
In 1921.
Okay.
Okay. And these are towns that mostly black, former black slaves got together, and they bought acres of land, and they formed their own townships. I've been to three of those towns in Oklahoma. I'll get to those in a moment. I'll get to it now. Now, the towns that I've been to out there, which are all over 100 years old, two of them predate, they're older than the state of Oklahoma. Taft, Oklahoma, Tallahassee, Oklahoma, and then the third town. These are black townships. These are historical black townships that people can look up online. Summit, Oklahoma. Now, you fly into, you fly into Tulsa, and then those towns, about maybe 45 minutes away from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, the interesting thing that struck me was, and I've been out there a number of times, I own property in one of those towns that I just named. The interesting thing about these three towns is, this is in 2021, I'm wondering how in the hell did people find these towns over 100 years ago? Because I would find difficulty in finding these towns now in 2021 if I wasn't with somebody who knew specifically where these towns were. And we're talking about we got paved roads, we got street lights, and all this stuff now. So I'm thinking, and back then, whoever came across Taft, which is originally called Twine, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, and Tallahassee, Oklahoma, there was brush. I mean, how did they find these places? Because I'm sure back then it was brush, nothing was cleared or whatever. But they found the towns, and those towns, at least the three I'm talking about, over 100 years old. The only thing I can think of, they were looking – Huh?
You going back to the chessboard?
You were saying?
The chessboard.
Yeah, well, back to the chessboard. Yeah, all right. So I'm put the locations where they put these towns were so they can be free from getting lynched by white folks. Now, let's go back to the chessboard. On the black side, you got 18 pieces. Let's say those 18 pieces represent the black townships in Oklahoma in 1921. There were 50 of them, but for the sake of this conversation, we're just going to use 18 out of the 50. Okay. Black Wall Street was a district of on 40 acres within the town of Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the time. In the case of the Black Wall Street chessboard, Black Wall Street, which was put together by old W. Gurley, instead of building Black Wall Street like the other black townships did, he didn't build a township. He had 40 acres. He developed Black Wall Street on the white side of the board. So he built a community within hostile territory on the white side of the board. So if you've got any chess piece, including the king, and you start the game on the white side of the board, and you're the only piece on the white side of the board, what do you think is going to happen to you?
Oops. Well,
none of the black townships in Oklahoma, not one, has ever been had to have any race riots, any racial violence, any kind of violence. In over 100 years, nothing has happened to any of those black towns. There's about 15 of them that still remain. The towns that disappeared basically dried up during the Great Migrations or whatever. And really, if you got some money today, you can go back and restore those towns today, but that's a whole other podcast on ghost towns. But that's what happened with Black Wall Street. O.W. Gurley, instead of setting up like the other black townships in a geographical position where that he was protected by nature, he set up shop in the midst of the white side of the board, and we know what happened to him.
Okay,
I think the chessboard is about the best illustration of that.
Okay, so we could think about egos and pride and maybe disrespect and maybe not considering that those mental ill people weren't ready to integrate their community.
That could be part of it. You have to remember, man, because Genghis Khan was a conqueror. Okay, the throne of England. Conquered, you know, Magellan, Captain Cook, these are all conquerors, or some people call them Christopher Columbus. You can call him explorer, you can call him a conqueror. That's what man does. We conquer.
So,
which includes killing, pillaging, raping, and destroying.
So would you say that he almost instigated a war by doing what he did?
No question about it. Once again, that's why I used the chessboard. That was the only significant black community that set up shop in hostile territory. How else can you explain that these other black townships had never experienced the same thing? What else can you come up with?
Yeah, well, I don't think a lot of people knew that part of the story or understood the dynamics of that because depending on how big the Tulsa community was, the Tulsa community
40 acres.
40 acres, and out of those 40 acres,
right.
What?
Black Wall Street was on 40 acres within the city of Tulsa, Oklahoma. These
so how
other
big
townships that we're talking about, huh?
How big is Tulsa, though?
I have to look that up. But these other townships, we're talking about black folks got together and bought 300 acres, 500 acres, 700 acres, 1,000 acres, and they started townships. He bought 40 acres within hostile territory within Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So do you know a lot about Gurley's background or where he was a wealthy man to start, right?
Yeah.
So this wealthy, proud man probably came in on his new car, horse, whatever, and just decided to set up shop. And just set up shop and didn't even negotiate with the people there. But do you know if he had to legitimately buy that land though, didn't he?
He legitimately bought the land. He legitimately sold it to black folk. And the only thing I can think of that was maybe what was on his mind, because it was a large municipality, he was going for the comfort and conveniences of a city at that time. Now, these other black townships were basically agricultural-based. So, you know, they had to develop their own, governments. The agriculture was the main way that a lot of those towns stayed open at the time. Many of them, a lot of the businesses that you talk about with Black Wall Street were in these other places as well. So, but the big difference is with these other black communities, they set up their own court systems, their own legal systems. They were self-contained. It wasn't as comfortable, it wasn't aesthetically pleasing looking as Tulsa, Oklahoma, but Tulsa had a larger population, but it was a hostile population towards Native Americans and black folks. And Gurley set up shop in a hostile territory on the chessboard. The other people did.
Well, thank you, L.A., for that perspective, because I don't think a lot of people knew that. And we've got to go to a break. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's chew on that for a while, for a couple of minutes, while we listen to some sponsors from our executive producer in the studio. Thank you, L.A. We'll be right back after these messages. And Naima Latif is in the studio playing our next sponsor group of sponsors.
What happens when a group of people are kidnapped from their homes, smuggled away in chains, and held captive in a foreign land where they are tortured, raped, and forced to perform hard labor by the lash of a whip and under the constant threat of death? Slavery, the African-American psychic trauma. What happened to the doctors, writers, scientists, builders, educators, and spiritual leaders from Africa's golden age? Who did they really capture and sell into slavery? Are all African Americans suffering from psychic trauma because of a conspiracy to hide their true identities? Do you have psychic trauma? Take the test on page 22 of the book and see. Order it online today at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. And get your personally autographed copy of the book, Slavery, the African American Psychic Trauma.
Are you constantly arguing with your spouse? Are your children misbehaving and acting out? Is someone in your family abusing drugs? Have you been the victim of domestic violence? Are you grieving over the loss of a loved one? Let us help you restore serenity to your life. At Serenity Family Social Services, we understand that good mental health is a result of emotional well-being. Our goal is to assist you and your family in removing emotional distress and restoring harmony and balance to your lives. We offer individual, couples, and family counseling. I'm Howard Williams, CEO of Serenity Family Social Services. Call us today at 312-315-4820. That's 312-315-4820.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness / stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
And we are back. Thank you for joining us this evening. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the triune brain. I just realized that was my sister's name without the U. I put a U, A, Trion was her name. His firstborn. So when I think about the events that have taken place over the last 100 years, my dad lived to be 95 years old. So he was in that period of time experiencing the racism and the prejudice and the Jim Crow South. And if you have a question or a comment about that period, if you want to add to the conversation about why the Creator allowed such a horrific event to take place back in, what happened to my, I just realized my flyer is gone. My banner left. if you want to comment, just call 215-383-5863, because what L.A. just described to us was that we had a group of people set up a community in hostile territory. I wish I could have the other side come on and give their explanation, but how do you explain hatred and bomb dropping and all that? I like to think of it similar to what we're going through now in the Middle East. I watched a documentary the other night on Born in Gaza. I almost cried on it, but I was just really in a state of wanting to learn a lesson from it, because the children in Gaza, in Palestine, are really suffering with psychological PTSD because of all the bombing and violence that is occurring today in the Middle East, with Israel dropping bombs and creating more problems for the children. The children are really the ones suffering in the Middle East. The adults are probably, from what I saw from this documentary, the adults are doing what they do, trying to help the children get through this war that keeps coming every 3 or 4 years. The same thing happens, the bombing, their homes are destroyed. How do you explain that mental illness from Israel that is continuing? And I think the biggest lesson that we can learn from the Black Wall Street massacre right now is that we got to stop this violence and massacres. Our children are being damaged from it, especially those children in the Middle East are part of our family. They're part of the human family, and they're going to grow up and be adults and move and do whatever they do, but they will forever, if they don't get any help. And one of the things they pointed out in this documentary is they're not getting help. Every few years, Israel attacks and creates genocide and massacre. And we've got to, I think, we should be more mindful about protesting these type of wars and violence. And just getting into not blaming our government for what happened 100 years ago, but working to stop the violence, stop the massacres, stop the wars, so that we can have healthier children. And I have one more piece I want to play about this three main parts of the brain, and then we're going to get into what's happening today in our world with these people choosing to look for a savior in a vaccine or an injection. So
now you probably know the name Dan Siegel. He's one of the giants in the field of interpersonal neurobiology. And Dan came up with a lovely hand model of the human brain. So let's kind of go through the hand model of the brain. And this can be useful for you to understand, but at times it might be useful for you to actually share this with your client. The wrist, the forearm coming up to here is like your spinal cord. And right here at the end of the wrist is like the base of your skull. And here, the bottom of your palm, this is like the reptile brain, the life support system of the brain. So, you know, if the rest of your brain is wiped out through, say, for example, a stroke or a car accident, this life support part of your brain, the reptile brain, can still keep your body alive, can still keep all your organs functioning and your breath and your heart and so forth. And this is where a lot of autonomic nervous system operates and stems from, this reptile brain. Now, above the reptile brain is the mammalian brain, often called the limbic brain or the emotional brain. So reptiles, they've got the fight or flight response, or they've got the freeze, shut down, flop and drop response, but they don't really have anything that is even remotely close to the complex emotional states that we see in mammals. And the limbic brain has many different parts to it, but two in particular that we'll be looking at in this course are the amygdala and the hippocampus. Now, don't worry about memorizing those terms for now. We will revisit them later. But this kind of is the middle brain, the limbic brain, the mammalian brain, basically responsible for emotions. Now, on top of the limbic, mammalian, emotional brain, you've got the cerebral cortex, the thinking cap of the brain. The cerebral cortex is much thicker in mammals, but especially so in primates, and particularly so in human beings, more so than any other primate. And this cerebral cortex, the thinking part of the brain responsible for consciousness and cognition. And right at the front of the cerebral cortex, you have the prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that's right up here at the front of your forehead, above your eyes. And particularly important to us is the medial prefrontal cortex, this bit in the middle right at the front, this bit up here. This plays a very important role in mindfulness and awareness. So let's just go through it again. You've got your spinal cord, you've got your reptile brain. Underneath your cerebral cortex, you've got your mammalian brain with the amygdala and hippocampus responsible for emotions. And then you've got your cerebral cortex, your thinking cap of the brain on top, and the medial prefrontal cortex right here in the center at the front, right there.
I'm trying to connect with a listener who says he's not getting any sound. So let me just check on 708829. Okay, I don't even see him in the studio, so I'm not sure where he is. Okay, so that was a really simple explanation of the brain, the where on the in the spot the brain stem, and where the reptilian brain is, and how the rest of the brain is working and consciousness comes in. We are in a state of unconsciousness about a virus right now. And so it's very difficult for many people to come out of, okay, it's very difficult. Let me have my tries. Let's see. Naima has dropped off, so let me just have him call a different number. 215-383. Okay, sorry for the interruption. We're in a state of reptilian survival mode, fear. A reactive mode right now. The majority, I would say at least half the population, because I believe half the population, it is said, has been injected with these chemicals that are looked at as the savior. So we're in a state of reptilian active mode for a lot of people on the planet. So if we look at that from that and look at the behavior of the people we're observing each day, making choices to put on the fur of their mouth and making choices to be injected and making choices to be in fear, then and then some of them are actually coming out of fear. Once they get injected, they feel like the savior arrived, the savior is in them, and they can take off their mask and they can be free and so on and so on and so on. So we, when we're looking at this brain, remember what LA described to us. I think that was a brilliant explanation of Wall Street, what LA described as the chessboard being one where the black players went to the white side of the board and started building a community. That was basically his interpretation of what happened back in the early 1900s with Black Wall Street, is that people moved into that community where there was a little hostility there, and they just put up their buildings and so forth, and they decided, we're going to camp here, we're going to build a community. And hostility grew in that area for whatever reason. Now, do we want to continue to blame the government 100 years later? Do we need some type of reward or some compensation for the mental illness that occurred 100 years ago? We've got a caller who's pressed 1. Let me see what that caller has to say. 779-777, your mic is open. Welcome. Give us your name, where you're calling from, please.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Can you speak up? I can't hear you. Can't hear you. Come on, speak up.
Kofi calling from Chicago.
Oh, Kofi. All right, Kofi. Go ahead. We can hear you now.
Yes. I mean, the Black Wall Street, they went to 2 white banks. They went to 2 white banks to help them finance. A guy named Gurley.
Right.
They had, you know, but the problem was it was right across the track from a white community. And the young kids, every day when a train track came, they had coal on it. They could grab a coal and they used to throw at each other every day.
I can't. You're a little not as clear. Can you change your speaker or your mic or something?
Okay, is that better now?
Let's see. Keep talking.
Okay, that should be better now, right?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Yeah, the young people threw coal. Black people, they threw coal off the train tracks at the white youth every day. So it was a lot of hostility living next door to them, you see. I mean, you say not blame.
Where did you get that information about throwing coal off the train?
A lady who used to live there.
Okay.
She spoke of it.
Okay. So you're kind of confirming what LA said. They were living in a community close to their neighbors who happened to be white, and there was hostility every day, I guess.
That's right.
Okay.
That was it. But we had, you know, we had over 500 towns, you know, Rosewood, North Carolina, you know, and this is what is happening now, today. You know, we're learning how to become farmers and builders again. You know, it's really happening. I see it. A lot of people don't see it. But, I mean, when you realize that you're Native American, this is your land, then you build on it, right? You know, if you confuse the people, tell us, right, if you confuse the people, tell us we're brought in chains. I just talked to Mama D, and she's still talking about we're brought in chains from Africa. That never happened. That was a hoax. That was a lie. And to get our mental function back, we need to hear truth. And that's why I've been sharing, you know. And you get respect. I get respect from other nationalities. And then they, well, can I help you? You know, they ask me, can I help you do what you're doing? Because, you know, and that's what we need to come out this mental illness. You ever heard of Abraham Lincoln?
I think we have.
He happened to be a brother, okay? He commissioned, I got a picture of him as a brother. He commissioned, during the Civil War, Robert Sherman, a Confederate soldier, to go get land, 400,000 acres of land in Georgia, and give 40 acres to the freedmen who fought in the war. They killed Abraham Lincoln 3 months later. Andrew Jackson became president. As vice president, he became president, and he canceled that order. You see? So this is American history that we need to see. Why did he cancel the order? Because they didn't want to give us the land back to us. This is the fight we fight today. My family has land, so I can really shut up and just return back to my reservation and build and just stop talking. But at least I want to give the historical aspect of what has happened in the past that we can correct now with courage.
Okay, so you're saying the solution is having the courage to what? Buy land, develop the land, and build new communities in non-hostile locations.
That and the government complete the order of Abraham Lincoln to give us some land back. That's the courage that I'm asking the European colonizers, the settlers, you know, because they said thank you to me for bringing out the truth. You know, we tied a line of y'all. We know y'all ain't from no Africa. And they have thanked me because I freed them up, you see, through the truth. So it's, you know, I'm working on a reparational land deal. You know, when I speak, things happen. So I want others to really realize that your voice has power, that we can actually say, hey, let's go. We can speak things into existence. And that's all I've been doing, and I've been seeing the change. All right. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Okay, so Kofi is suggesting that not so much in for correcting what happened on Wall Street with the land thing, but that even going into the Abraham Lincoln promise that African Americans, blacks, need to have land given to them as sort of a reparations deal. So that's one person's suggestion to healing the trauma of 100 years ago in Oklahoma that still has people blaming the government and insisting that we need to have some type of reparations. 708-602, your mic is open.
Greetings, my dear family. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear. Thank you. This is Brother Eddie Harris, right?
Yes, 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 my sister. Yes, ma'am. Yes, it is.
And
I'd like to say I don't disagree with anything that anybody has contributed, because for me, once we start to actually see the word, or better yet, the number behind the words that we are all saying, we're saying the same thing. It's on the five. I got five on it. See, because that's basically what we're talking about when we look at the year of Tulsa, Oklahoma, you referred, and we keep referring to 100 years ago. That's a one. And it happened in 1924. I mean, I'm sorry, 1921. Please excuse me, family. 1921. Well,
yes.
That's a four. One plus four, we're back to that five. This is 2021, the five. This is what we're manifesting. Manifestation, or to manifest, is five. As Brother Kwame said, we're speaking it into existence. And that phrase, if we understand a number, we'll see everything we're saying by number is what we're talking about constantly, over and over and over again. But we don't see the number in primarily anything that we're saying. We're just saying the number and what we've been given as his story. And even though it's his story, by the word behind the number, we're actually speaking into existence of what's actually happening in real time in front of our face, in front of us. But because of the number of the word we speak, not being able to see and transform that number to connect to the whole, to see a bigger picture than just the picture of the word and definitions that we are attached to. But we're there. We're there, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I'm not even going to go through the transition of I was trying to get the family to see everything that they were basically talking to me about and basically arguing or debating. I told them, understand, and if you need me to give you the word directly by number to see, we're saying the same thing and we're arguing about the same thing that basically keeps us in the five called confusion, family. It's the confusion we're in because we don't see the game that's being played. Game is five. Confusion is five. This is why words like color keep coming up, the five. We keep talking about gas in the pipeline. Gas is five. We keep talking about disarming the citizens with guns. Guns is five. They keep using the same circle, circle being five, that they're using. They're just using different words. The number remains the same. It does not change. And when we start to get that, even wherever we are with the words we use, just seeing the numbers and the words we use, we see we talking about the same thing, and they're keeping us confused by the definition of the words that we give power to that they have given us through the program. That's it. So, well, again, I'm loving. Go ahead, my sister.
I like what you said about when someone needs your advice, when someone is ready to hear your wisdom, you're available. And that is where we are in this crazy corona adventure, where people's reptilian brains are more active than their frontal brain of wisdom and consciousness. We cannot force our opinions on them anymore. We have to offer wisdom, advice, but people are not going to listen to us anymore much, but we are ready to help them when they're ready.
This is correct. I love the praise or the lyric of music, key being a number of music, that we were given by a group of four individuals called the Beatles. And it basically says that, you know, when we give wisdom and it's not received, just let it be. Speaking the words of wisdom, even when we speak words of wisdom, once we give it, let it be. Because it's either they're going to get it or they're not. And we don't have any decision on when, if they get it. Just let it be. But speak the words of wisdom, and that's only speaking the truth, family. That's all wisdom is the truth as you see it. And if we're true with ourselves, if it's not correct, then you or another family member corrects me. Pull my coattail. I have no, and any of us should have no problem with being corrected, because that's what we're here for, to fill the gap. And since we were talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma, and 1921, those are the three streets that they bombed. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. This is why the group is called GAP, which is 11, the two family, which is no more than our mind. They dropped a bomb on me. If we understand the numbers of every darn word they said in that song, woo! Find out what they're saying. It ain't me. I got what I'm saying. And I don't want to reveal it, but you could figure it out by the number of the words. You dropped a bomb on me, baby. You dropped a bomb on me. That's the age we're in, Aquarius. The bomb. Drop them seeds, family.
Wow, I have to listen to that song later. That's an interesting reminder of that group. You said they're that's the Gap band, right?
That's the Gap band. The Gap band. That's
right.
How they got their name, and that's what the record is talking about. Greenwood,
okay.
G, Archer Street,
okay.
A, and Pine Street.
Right,
B,
right.
Gap.
Right.
The Gap band, and by number, that's 11, which is the universe. That's where we are. It's called Revelations, the 2. That's where we are, family. And I'm just giving it from the perception and my journey of what I see. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That is so interesting. I'm curious to know why they had to drop a bomb. I'm going to open up L.A.'s number as well. Do you have any information, Eddie, about why and who dropped the bomb?
Oh, of course. It was because, again, us coming to that realization of us. It's up to us to fix us, thank us, knowing that we're depending on us to make this happen. We did not need the government or anybody else. It was us, the black community, Wall Street, that was creating this paradigm that they wanted to stop then and have still stopped as of today. Because by number, I'm not even going there, if you see it, the way you're supposed to see it, you'll see exactly what I'm seeing it, but you'll see it from a different angle the way you're supposed to see it. This is how we're supposed to see it. This is why we get it in different angles, different ways.
Okay.
So again.
Yeah, L.A., are you there? Your mic is open. L.A., your mic is open. You pressed 1. I think it's 863-816. Is that L.A.? Yeah, check your mute button.
It's everything everybody's been saying, like even violence. Every word has a number. And when we see the number of what they're doing, violence is no more than 28, which is 1. 2 plus 8 is 10, which is 1. War is 1. It's called a psychological war. Psychological is 44, which is 8. 8 is fear. Fear is 8. What do they call it? A psychological war? A war of fear. This is what we're constantly talking about. Why the people are getting a shot? Because it started with fear. Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead, L.A.
Oh, you hear me? Okay. Right now, there are over 236 ghost towns in Oklahoma, which essentially means, and there are over like 3,800 in the entire United States, but keeping this to Oklahoma. Essentially, anybody on this phone call right now, or anybody who hears this podcast, you can essentially go in, and if you want to buy a town, you can just go in and buy one of these ghost towns, put in your own government, and call it a day. If people want to get healed, if you feel you need healing.
Okay. So so what you're saying is the solution, got an echo. I don't know what you have. Okay. The solution, I think what you're saying, L.A., if I hear you right, is that buy land and build new communities.
Exactly.
And not try and blame the government L.A., who dropped the bomb in 21? Was it the government that dropped the bomb?
From what I understand, they dropped dynamite. I mean, look, are we going to stay in victim mode, or are we going to go out and buy the damn towns?
Right.
You can't have it both ways.
That's exactly.
You can't have it both ways.
Right. So that's exactly the point, and what Brother Eddie Harris is saying, we're all saying the same thing based on his new analogy of the numbers, and really the Gap Band was made a song of it because that there, it's an emotional event. It has triggered the event in 1921 has triggered not only anger and bitterness and resentment, but the event of 1921 has triggered musical creativity.
I'm saying, let's go one step further. Tomorrow's your anniversary. All right, tomorrow, on an individual basis, if you feel strong about it, go out and buy you an acre or 40 acres or whatever amount of land you want to buy, because it's out there. It's pretty cheap.
Yeah.
Like I said, Oklahoma's got over 200 ghost towns, and a lot of the stuff you can buy for less. Hell, I bought 200 acres of land. I paid $200 an acre of land for some land in Texas. So you can do the same thing in Oklahoma. The state of Illinois has over 80 ghost towns. And anybody can go. There's no competition. So instead of whining, bitching, and complaining about what happened 100 years ago, then if you feel that strong about it, go out and get together with some other people or get together by yourself and start buying up a town yourself.
And that really is the solution, because if we're waiting on the government to do anything these days, you'll be buried and gone. But when that happens, plus our government, let's just be real. The mind, we're talking about the triune brain tonight, as well as the mind that created the massacre. It's mental illness. The whole discussion should come full circle back to the mind's ability to either create death and suffering, as it's doing in the Middle East right now, or the mind that could create what LA is talking about, what Brother Eddie is here. Look at the numbers, analyze the numbers, work on the numbers, go forward on the numbers. And as LA is always talking on his show about, come up with the money, the numbers, and get the property, get the land. Let's do this, people, and stop waiting for the blaming and playing victim mode. Let's just get together and work what we have been given, is the power to create something new. We have this situation in the earth right now of propaganda trying to say we all need a savior, a vaccine savior, which is not even a vaccine. It's not the typical antibody production chemicals. And so the brain that we're looking at with people who don't understand that is a reptilian brain, just like in the past. We still have this reptilian brain working in our atmosphere, in our society, in our communities, in our earth now. This is a global thing now. Massacre 100 years ago was a community thing. We are looking at a bomb that's been dropped on the whole planet. And I would say that bomb is deception and the bomb of propaganda. And they continue to be dropping these bombs on us to get us to submit to the savior injection that is going to change the way people behave. So I'm so grateful for all you brothers chiming in. And I think we got, I think that's Brother Kwame who just pressed one, that are giving solutions. We're past the point of looking for the government to give us a solution. It's not going to happen. I don't want it to happen. The government is totally dysfunctional, in my opinion, and a bunch of psychopaths there keep promoting the same old thing. So let me get one more opinion here from Brother Kwame Sunhorse. Your mic is open.
Greetings, Sister Viata, and to Brother L.A. and to Brother Eddie. And they're both on point. The part is, and what Brother L.A. is speaking on, in obtaining land. Because they're not making no more land on this planet. And once you own a land, you can create, like you said, there are ghost towns. Then you can create a town. You want to create, and then you want to be able to incorporate your own community and have government run by people that look like us, that think like us, and that are willing to do for us what we're needing to do for ourselves. Because this is what the Overground Railroad, when I said about creating oases and OA, OASIS means our ancestor spirit and service. Mother Nature is going to be of service to the children of the planet. We have to begin to go back to her and build with balance and order on her to be able to be prosperous and create what we created there in Oklahoma and Rosewood down in Florida and, you know, many other places. I'm up here visiting my mom in DeKalb, Illinois, but I went down to Chicago, and I went through the communities that I grew up in and went to high school in, and it's not even the same space, because what they had where everybody that you rode around on 35th Street and from King Drive or South Park back, all of that area over there now has people that don't look like us that used to have all of us there. And they've regentrified this and been able to push these people out of these communities and take over and do this. Okay, let them have that. Now, would we be able to take what Brother Elliot suggested, because the land is plentiful, and begin to get those resources? Because if we can build places and have these spaces that they're now regentrifying and doing over, what can we do with some new land, new spaces, and places with the mindset and the skills of our people to begin to reconstruct? And this is the third reconstruction that we're going through. We need to reconstruct the environment that is going to be conducive for the next seven generations to be able to talk about, yeah, we had a Black Wall Street, but now we have a new, you know, conscious street, a conscious street with conscious people, with conscious spirits. These are the things in which we got to look at to be able to tackle the mental illness that you're talking about, because as Gabriel Monte always talks about it, mental illness and the addiction comes from the environment. And in an environment that is deconstructing human beings, you can't build a constructive mind. So what we're needing to do is do as we're speaking here now. What are the solutions that we need as a people to begin to reconstruct ourselves? Because we've been put into this menticide mentality that we will destroy ourselves for the purpose of grandizing what they say that we should be or what we should have or what we can not do. We can show and prove all of that different because we came all with a purpose. We're born free. We choose what kind of captivity or enslavement we want to put ourselves in.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we've got another caller. I'll leave your mic open. I'm going to go to this other caller. 520-296, your mic is open. Welcome. Give us your name, where you're calling from, please.
Dr. V, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Mama AZ, you're back on a different number?
Yes. I'm having issues with my phone. Anyway, thank you, Brother Kwame. And thank you, Brother Harris. And I want to piggyback in on what Brother L.A. said. Somebody had mentioned some numbers twice, and it was 16. And 1 and 6 is 7. 7 and 7 is 14, which is a 5. And I can't remember in what context that's somebody mentioned that those numbers twice, which adds up to a 5. But what I want to say, Brother L.A. Said he really didn't understand how some of those black townships were found. How did the people know, or something like that? I'm going to tell you how they knew. How I found where you are, Brother L.A., where the mayor is in Napoleon Davis's teepee, it was in a dream that I had 2 years prior to that and did not understand. I was in a sweat lodge on the Crow Reservation with Peggy, you know, and I couldn't understand why this was coming to me. Well, when I ended up leaving the Crow Reservation and traveling to that area, I ended up at a sweat in Minnesota, and then I ended up finding that teepee of Napoleon Davis's by way of Joanne Fox, who was a mayor at one of the times there in one of those little black townships. Okay, well, when I came up to that teepee, I knew then that that teepee was a part of this black township that many of the people did not understand or overstand metaphysically what Napoleon Davis was wanting, was in the process or trying to convey to those people. Many of those black townships were founded esoterically. In other words, they were guided there by ascended masters. And if you have seen that teepee earlier, that museum there, Napoleon Davis's teepee, how that elder had hooked it up, it was as though somebody from another dimension guided him to put that teepee, construct that museum, teepee museum, together. And all of those, even Dr. Lateef's husband had guided me along with Chief Frank Fullscrow and my dad from the other side before Dr. Lateef's husband left the planet. He was guiding me through a vision, and I realized that many of those black townships, even Tulsa bombing Oklahoma. You see, people, we don't really recognize who we are. We are so powerful. If we only took a moment and really discern who we really are and the powers of knowings that we have, we would not have all of this. That's what Oklahoma and Napoleon Davis was wanting to convey. Even his family didn't have a clue. These are the metaphysical things. And like Brother Harris says, everything you need to know, family, is in the numbers. If I don't know anything else, I'm very clear about that. So that's what Napoleon Davis, that's what many of those people who found those particular areas, they were esoterically guided. And I know this now. I know this. That's what that teepee represents. And thank you for opening up and helping me to remove some additional layers from my third eye, family. Thank you, Brother Harrison.
Mama Z, you just brought up such an important point to end with that, the third eye. Where is the third eye located but the front of the brain, the pineal gland? That's why we're talking about the triune brain, because we have choices. You just, oh, my goodness, all those words you told, we are so powerful. We choose to use that pineal gland, that frontal brain, rather than the reptilian brain that we are seeing demonstrated all over this planet. But we are here tonight to remind one another that we are so powerful, as you just said. And we can choose. We have a choice. What part of your brain are you going to use? Are you going to stay in fear and reactive mode instead of gratitude for this pineal gland and for all the experiences we've had? When you mentioned about the Crow Reservation, you know I had to go back to that journey that I had to take all the way to see Peggy and spend 5 days, there you said number five, on the Crow Reservation to have that experience with that community of Native Americans who are so lost in their addictions and their food, their standard American diet. And then to talk here tonight, to be here on this night, 100-year anniversary of this event that is reminding us how powerful we are to choose a different life, not blaming the government, not being in victim mode, but using the frontal brain, the pineal gland, to move us forward in the Overground Railroad. Oh, hallelujah.
And I need to say this one other quick thing, Brother Kwame. I didn't know you were chiming in, but I had this powerful dream with you, myself, and Sister Nuruddina traveling to that Chicago from North Carolina. I am not sure what that means, but that Chicago is something getting ready to happen. And in Chicago and North Carolina and Arizona is really connected. So I needed to say that. Thank us. Thank us. Figure it out. Tell me if you ideas. Thank you. Peace.
We're going to continue this conversation tomorrow morning on the Monday Morning Mindfulness. Zelda is going to be the host tomorrow morning. She's going to continue this conversation. But I'm going to let you brothers have the last word tonight, because it's been so exciting and so inspiring to hear all three of you guys say the same thing in a different way of what we need to do to move forward. So, L.A., I'm going to let you have a word, and then Kwame can finish off. Brother L.A., you have final words for us?
Just go out and buy some land and call it a day.
Hallelujah. There you go. I mean, really, it's got to be that simple for us, because people have complicated everything for the last year, and we got to simplify. Buy some land, call it a day. Thank you. Brother Eddie, what's your word? Brother Eddie, are you still there?
Yes, I am. I'd like to just say, again, agreeing with everybody, because the land starts for me with numbers, which is no more than 8, and 8 is no more than your thinking. Let's start with our thinking, as we all do, that piece of land in your mind, to buy the land of area or free land township that we're talking about. So yes, and just like, again, that 514, which is the fix, is no more than our health. When we talk about our health, we're talking about the 5. So, again, just stay on the 5, because the 5 is this year. And we'll get into that reptilian mind of the brain, the 5, tomorrow morning. Peace and love, family.
Hallelujah. Right. Okay, Kwame Sunhorst, you've got the final word. Thank you.
And thank you. And Brother L.A. is correct, because in obtaining the land, but when you look at land spelled backward, it says D-N-A-L. And what does L? L is the creator when we're speaking in that term. But it's in the DNA, because we are seeds. And when they push us down, and they've been pushing us down, but what happens when you push a seed down into the earth and it's given the right nutrition from the earth and the water and sun, we grow. And this is what we're here to do. Even though that they've been pushing us down, and when we have the right land and the right nutrients, and then we calculate just how, what Brother Eddie said is number 8, but when you turn 8 on its side, it's the symbol of infinity. We're eternal beings.
Yeah.
And so we're all speaking a language of how we're going to recreate, and this is what all the planets above are doing with the retrogrades and with the alignments and what we're having on the 10th of June. And the 10th is a beginning, but that is going to be the super solar eclipse that will be on the 10th in Gemini, of all the energies to be in, the air, the mind.
Hallelujah. Well, I thank you all so much for really making this a very powerful, inspiring show by the collective contributions. So Naima's phone is stuck. So I'm going to just end this show with Born of Water, a reminder of how powerful we are. And so it's a powerful song about I am. Who am I? I am this. And this, we move forward right in tomorrow morning with Monday Morning Mindfulness. Zelda will be continuing this discussion because tomorrow is actually the 100th anniversary. So she's going to carry on tomorrow morning with starting her breathing and Monday Morning Mindfulness. So join Zelda tomorrow morning, 515-605-9325, the Female Solution. And let's take it out with Born of Water. Cleansed and powerful, I am. We are so powerful. And that's what this show has been all about, really, to remind us how powerful our mind is and how we move forward. Let's plan back. Don't wait for the government. Don't wait for the government to come back.
Born of water, cleansing, powerful, healing, changing, I am. Born of water, cleansing, powerful, healing, changing, I am. Born of water, cleansing, powerful, healing, changing, I am. Born of water, cleansing, powerful,
gracias. Have a wonderful week, and tomorrow, see you tomorrow morning in Female Solution.